As you just heard, at this hour, the outer bands of Hurricane Lane are causing problems associated with heavy rains and winds. HPR's news director Bill Dorman joins us with the latest update from the National Weather Service that they've just released.
Yeah, and it's, again, much the same in terms of the broad outlines, and you heard Derek mention remaining a Category 4. You know, we keep waiting for that to slow down a bit in terms of the speed, but near 130 miles an hour, just about 200 miles south-southwest of Kailua Kona. 7 miles an hour, that slow pace continues, too, in the movement. That's a concern, as you know, in terms of movement over water, and that extends some of that rain. And as with tropical storms, it's the rain that comes first and then the winds. And this morning, checking in with our contributing reporter, Sherry Bracken, on the Big Island, those measurements of rain on the east side of the Big Island, some gauges near Hilo, more than a foot of rain, a pace of an inch an hour the last 12 hours, some more in some places, and some places a lot more. North side of the Big Island as well, around Kohala, the Okonepule Highway has been closed because of a landslide. You're starting to see, again, some of the impacts of the rain in terms of some road closures and in terms of some landslides and flash flooding. On Big Island, Maui also getting more of this, and the system, again, just grinding north, and that is grinding the operative word on that, just on that slow, relentless pace. One interesting thing that the National Weather Service has come out with is a bit of a timeline. Again, this remains uncertain, but in terms of the impact, you know, you see we've all become sort of magnetized towards that cone of uncertainty and where's it moving, where's it going. But in terms of the impact, so for example, Big Island, tropical storm force winds across portions of the Big Island this morning, dangerous hurricane force winds expected by tonight. Island by island, Maui County, damaging tropical force winds expected late today or tonight, dangerous hurricane force winds in some areas by Friday. And then, of course, Oahu, as this moves north, late tonight for what the National Weather Service calls damaging tropical storm force winds, dangerous hurricane force winds expected Friday into Friday night. And Kauai, it's still sort of early to tell right now in terms of whether a tropical storm warning or hurricane warning might be needed. A watch is in effect right now. And again, just in terms of terminology to remind folks, a warning means that conditions are expected within the area. So a hurricane warning means hurricane conditions are expected. A watch means that hurricane conditions are possible. So again, just on the terminology there. But again, that moving slowly up, not a lot of change in speed, but it continues to be a slow-moving storm.
Right, and then I know emergency officials just want to make sure folks, like I said, keep off the roads during the height of this. Not safe with all the concern about flash flooding.
And exactly, and that's a point worth mentioning again in terms of the rain, the specificity of this forecast. You know, it's bands of rain, and they go and they're in spots, and then they're not. And so, again, the caution, the abundance of caution, being one of the phrases that you hear a lot of people use in terms of staying off the roads, really, if you're able to, and just letting this pass on through, if you're able to.
Right. Stay safe and stay dry.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you very much, Bill Dorman. And we also reach out now at this hour to Maui County. Online with us is Rod Antone from the mayor's office. Hi, Rod. What can you tell us at this point? What's the snapshot?
Hey, Catherine. How you doing?
So what can you tell us as far as flooding or road closures? What's the situation?
Okay, so far we've got several roads in Hana that's closed. Hana's getting the most rain right now on Maui. So we've got Wanapanapa, Ulaniu, Waikoloa roads. They're all county roads. They're all closed due to flooding. State Department of Transportation reported some trees down on Hana Highway this morning, but they've since cleared these locations. At this time, though, we have to say that even though people can travel Hana Highway to get to Hana, we do not recommend it. We encourage people to limit their travel as much as they can. especially to remote areas such as Hana, where they could get stuck behind a landslide or a fallen tree that's coming down with the storm. In East Molokai, we are urging residents there to get over to the west side as soon as possible before flooding prevents them from traveling to the evacuation center at Molokai High School. So if you know you're going to seek shelter and you're planning on going to Molokai High School and you live in East Molokai, it's better that you leave now before flooding prevents travel. We had about 215 people in evacuation centers last night countywide. The most was about 80 people gathered together at Maui High School. Reminder, Maui High School and Lokulani are our pet-friendly shelters. People are encouraged to bring their own bedding and snacks to make themselves feel comfortable. These are the only official shelters in Maui County: Hana High School, Lahaina Intermediate, Kinke Kaulike High School, Molokai High School, Maui High School, Lokulani Intermediate, Lanai High School. There are no other shelters, official shelters. People have been spreading some misinformation out there. These are the only shelters. Also, the county of Maui is not shutting off water service to anybody. The storm could knock out power, which could, we'd lose power to our pumps, and we couldn't pump it through the system. That's how it could affect our water service, but the county's not shutting it off at any scheduled point during this storm.
Okay, and then hopefully people have their stores of water already,
yes,
if they've been heeding the warnings from emergency management folks to prepare.
Yes, yes. And that's about it right now. Everybody's hunkered down. A lot of stores have closed. Restaurants have called to say that, to ask the county if they should close or stay open tonight. We're saying we should probably shut your doors and secure your facilities.
Have you gotten any word from the tourism folks? I don't know if any hotel guests are seeking shelter at your local schools, at the emergency shelters.
We have some of the crowd at the shelters are tourists, from what I understand. Some of them are from the west side. They're nervous that if they aren't already in central Maui when the storm hits, they might not be able to make it over the Pali and get to their plane on time. Some people, we've got some interesting calls from those at timeshares, at condos, wondering if they can tape up their windows. That's kind of a special case because they don't own the property, and county's not really in a position where we can tell them to do that. But we are telling them to take precautions and get the supplies and all that. If they don't feel safe, we have evacuation centers near our tourist areas in west and south Maui.
Okay, and I know there are a lot of folks staying at units, vacation rentals, and there may be a lot of illegal ones out there, but hopefully they all stay safe. We appreciate your time, Rod Antone. Thanks very much for giving us the latest snapshot.
Thank you, Catherine. Aloha.
That was Rod Antone, a public information officer from the mayor's office from Maui, giving us the very latest from that island. And earlier this morning, we talked to Puna resident Deborah Walsh about what conditions were like overnight. She says they were wakened by heavy rains in her Big Island neighborhood, but the stormy weather has been on and off.
Well, the clouds are thinning. Light is coming through. It's barely sprinkling. We've had some heavy rains at times, off and on. My rain gauge says we got about 6 inches over the course of the night, but right now everything's pleasant and calm. We haven't had any heavy winds here. If you have a yard that has low places, you have some flooding, little lakes forming. If you have good drainage, you're fine. I looked down the road and there was our usual puddles from heavy rains. We're used to heavy rains. And apparently I read on Facebook this morning that there was a power outage a block away and Helco was on it. I think the transformer went out or something. Yeah, and I think it was just one particular block down at 10th and Maku'u. I'm on 11th and Maku'u. Somebody said they had a power outage. I'm guessing that it's fixed by now because I haven't seen anything else online about that. During the night, we were woken up several times by the pounding of pelting of rain on the roof. But, yeah, it's mellow right now. You actually, light's trying to come through the clouds.
That was Big Island resident Deborah Walsh describing what conditions are like in her neighborhood. And as we mentioned in Hilo, there are road closures due to flooding, but Walsh says she's staying put until officials give the all clear. This morning, special city buses are being dispatched to bring Oahu's homeless to shelters. The free bus trips are something Oahu Transit Services rolled out before in other storms. HPR's Kuvehi Arishi has been out talking to the homeless and the outreach workers at camps in flood-prone areas. She joins us here this morning in studio.
Oh, good morning, Catherine.
Are you dry?
I am, but I've got, you can see I have my rain gear on. Yes, so we have a latest census estimate from the point in time count was about 6,500 homeless statewide. So these are folks that are a lot more vulnerable than the average person to these to this natural disaster kind of coming in. So yesterday I went to Ala Park and sort of saw everyone come out of under canals and along streams and brought all their things along sidewalks so they could kind of be up in dry somewhat and figure
safer
out
areas,
exactly,
right? Safer areas
and figure out what they're going to do next, because I was actually talking to outreach workers who remembered a few years back there was that couple who was living alongside a stream, and they actually got swept away by the flash flooding, and one of them had passed away, and these homeless couple. And for outreach workers, safety is the number one reason why they go out. So they're hoping they can make sure nothing happens in this particular hurricane lane.
Now, I understand that the city opened about, I don't know, a dozen shelters or so this morning at 10 o'clock?
Yes, so 10 o'clock, I think we've got 20 here on Oahu. I know the Big Island had about five, at least American Red Cross volunteers opened five on the Big Island. These shelters, it's interesting. So I spoke to some of the homeless folks I spoke to were sort of relieved that the hurricane was coming, because this meant no red tape in getting into a shelter where they could have a warm, you know, place to lie their head and not have that stigma of being kind of that homeless person that needs help. So that was part of it. But a lot of the more chronically homeless, they plan to forego shelters just because they have so much that of accumulated tools or tarps or everything that they need. Or a dog or whatnot, and they don't want to get into a shelter where they have to deal with sort of other parts of that. But I did get to go out with Kimo Carvalho, communications director over at the Institute for Human Services, to talk about where they were going and what outreach efforts were like.
Canals, under freeways, in their cars and hidden areas. You know, oftentimes that spurs crime, assault, anything that can be personally dangerous. So, you know, we want to, hate to say, you know, as long as they're visible and we can find them, we can make sure that we can protect them or get them access to some kind of safe area.
So, Kimo was saying that his agency has about 12 outreach workers that have been canvassing the last couple of days. They have a set list of folks that they kind of have been working with consistently, about 400 homeless they know in their area, that they know where to find them. They know how to get to them. Some of them have cell phones, so they know how to get in touch with them. They tried to do that. And I also know Governor David Ige sent out some staff from DLNR and also DOT to check state parks under freeways to find all our homeless populations, to let them know that they can jump on a bus and get into shelters. But it's always a challenge trying to, one, convince them to take shelter, but also to find them in the first place.
Right. And I know, I think on the driving in on the way into work, I heard an announcement that the shelters are going to be pet friendly.
Yes. So on Oahu, all shelters are pet friendly. And also, I think on the bus systems, they only can bring like one bag or something like that. But you can bring your animal if it's in something that's secure.
Right. As long as it's not a threat to anybody else, right?
Exactly. And that's essentially, you know, it's safety in the shelters and safety outside. So hopefully we'll see some of that.
And is it your sense, though, that there was willingness from the homeless to go in and stay dry?
The ones that I spoke to, I feel like they perhaps have been homeless longer and they feel safer near the tree, or, you know, like outside and not in some sort of cramped up shelter where they might have, we've seen this in Pune during the volcanic eruptions, but some of the activity that goes on in shelters of people in such high stress situations in such close proximity isn't something that they might be comfortable with doing. They'd feel more comfortable outside even if it was raining.
Right. And I know that the emergency officials have been saying if you go to a shelter, you know, bring all your food and supplies, but, you know, they're not going to turn anybody away if you don't have enough food and there'll be, you know, nourishment.
Exactly. I think, and that was part of it for the folks who kind of saw this as relief, for some of the homeless that saw this as a way to get that free bed and get that, you know, and then get that free meal. I think that's going to go a long way to kind of help them through this.
And hopefully maybe some of them will take up the offer to stay in those shelters, you know, long term, or, you know, seek long term help and counseling if they need it.
Definitely. We, when I was over on the Big Island, seeing all the folks coming into the shelters there during the lava flow, a good number of them were homeless. You know, I'd say a majority of the folks in there were homeless. Anyone who had a home or family nearby went and did that, but the evacuation shelters were mostly homeless.
And do we have a handle on whether these shelters have enough help? Are there enough volunteers stepping up to the plate?
I do know the American Red Cross has been asking for more volunteers. They could always use more volunteers in some of their shelters. But as far as I know, right now with respect to the homeless, a lot of the outreach is just to get them, find them, get that word out that these shelters are available and the transportation is available to get there, because that's another, you know, that's another issue for the homeless.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Kuvei.
Yes, thank you.
That was Kuvei Hiraishi talking about what outreach workers are doing to get homeless campers into disaster shelters and out of danger, particularly if they're living in areas like under bridges or along the shoreline. This is The Conversation on statewide members-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. In today's backyard quiz, we're looking back at stormy weather in our islands. It was quite a damaging hurricane, even though it was only a Category 1 storm. It caused significant property damage on Kauai, but it also knocked out electrical power on Oahu for weeks. It had been quite a year. This particular hurricane was the 23rd tropical storm and 12th and final hurricane of that year's hurricane season. The storm came north from the equator in mid-November. It picked up speed when it moved into cooler air, and at its peak, this storm hit Niihau, Kauai, and Oahu with wind gusts exceeding 100 miles per hour and rough seas more than 30 feet in height. And here's a hint, this hurricane had a Hawaiian name. Do you know the storm we're looking for? Bonus points if you can tell us what it means. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets our reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Hi, I'm Adrie Kong from Sarawak in East Malaysia on the island of Borneo. Hear the conversation live or anytime you want on HPR mobile app. Find it in the Apple App Store or Google Play.
On September 1st in the Atherton Studio, Hawaii's own Gypsy 808 transports you back to the Parisian swing era with their Gypsy Jazz. And just for fun, they'll add a few Hawaiian swing tunes to the evening's mix. Swing dancers and sedentary jazz lovers are welcome. Tickets at hprtickets.org or by calling HPR during business hours. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
The Declaration of Independence promises people life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But does that mean the government should get involved in making us happy?
It may not be society's business to make people happier, but reducing suffering, that's something else.
That's Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman. My interview with him this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
This evening at 7.
How do sick and injured people get help during a storm? It's a matter of life and death for some patients, riding out the storm in hospitals, long-term care facilities, or at home. Maintaining the healthcare system during an emergency is a job of Chris Crabtree. He's the director of Hawaii Healthcare Emergency Management. It's a statewide organization that works with every level of Hawaii's healthcare system, including hospitals, dialysis clinics, assisted living facilities, blood banks, and pharmacies. Chris spoke with the Conversation's Ryan Finnerty earlier this morning to explain how he goes about preparing medical providers to maintain the chain of care during a disaster.
Typically with this type of event, whether it's tropical storm force winds or whether it's hurricane strength winds, rain's always a challenge because you have flooding, which impacts access to healthcare facilities, or it can. It can also cause, the wind and the rain can cause some power outages. But all the hospitals have backup generators, and they test them monthly. So that's not a concern in the short term. It's just in the long term that would be. And just ensuring that their supply chain is open, or they're able to get what they need in order to continue to provide the essential patient services that they're doing for the community.
And so how do you maintain those supply chains during a severe weather event like this? Because doctors, nurses, pharmacists, x-ray technicians, they're all people too. They all have families that they're worried about. How does any kind of facility in the whole healthcare system maintain its staff during an event like this?
It's a great question. And it's a question that we've actually looked at and planned for over years, just because it is common. We're looking at probably about 30-40% of the staff not showing up, simply either because access is a challenge they can't get through, or the concern over family. And so what the facilities are doing, and the coalition working with them, is coming up with plans. It's multifold. One is we ask the facilities to within their plan is to establish a family care center. So that they need to consider bringing their staff and their family over to their facility if it's safe. Or sometimes it's more convenient to have the family in a shelter, and if they know they're safe, that's okay too. But if they have a plan and they're able to have the family safely at these healthcare facilities, then obviously the staff are able to work, and they don't have to be concerned about their family, and they know that they're being taken care of. And what that does is obviously allows them to focus on caring for the patients that they serve, and that peace of mind goes a long way. That's one thing that we do. It's also for pets as well that a lot of people don't consider, because pets are family to a lot of people, including myself. And so in the event, should there be pets involved, I asked the facilities to come up with a pet plan to be able to, have their workers or their staff to bring their pets and have them there at the facility, not necessarily inside, or there could be a room or something, but to have a plan so they're not in a care area, but they're in a safe area, just like family. So again, they would have peace of mind and be able to focus and be able to come into work. Now, in the event that that's not enough, in the sense that there's still a shortage, we have several contingencies. One is we have a disaster medical response and recovery team of about 110 paramedics, physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, admin and logistics staff that are on this team, and we can send those individuals to those different hospitals and different healthcare facilities to help augment. But we also have an MOU that says that we share everything from personnel to equipment and supplies. And through Hawaii Healthcare Emergency Management, we manage and coordinate and prioritize who gets what and how much of that. And so, for example, Hurricane Iniki in 1992, we assisted Wilcox, which is a phenomenal hospital, with staffing their hospital because a lot of their workers were working 24/7 and they needed rest and they needed to, finally get a chance to see how their homes were and check on family and stuff like that, as well as some just weren't able to make it in. So we pulled doctors and nurses from all over the state from the different hospitals and we coordinated getting them to that hospital and helping to staff that. So there's a lot of different approaches that we have in our plans and that we can do in order to try to meet those staffing needs.
And so you're able to address the staffing piece to an extent, but
yep.
What kind of reduction in services can we expect at any given healthcare facility with that expectation that you mentioned earlier that 30 to 40% of the staff may not make it into the hospital?
Well, that's a good question. It really depends on what the specialty of that individual or individuals are and what area that they're working in, right? Because hospitals and other healthcare facilities are good at shifting and having cross-trained personnel, but if there's certain specialties and such, obviously those will be reduced. Typically in a storm like this, in order to protect the public, the residents of Hawaii and the community is a lot of the outpatient services, some of the general patient clinics and stuff that might be in harm's way, they're going to shut down for at least until the hurricane passes because they don't want to put their people in danger as well as a community by going to those facilities in the middle or when a storm is rapidly approaching and get caught in that. So that's one thing that they do to kind of prevent. So, there are going to be services that are going to be reduced, usually the outpatient type services and clinics and some of the lower acuity items. The higher acuity, there's a variety, again, of different things that we do, as well as if patients are in need of some services and staffing is impacting certain areas. And what we do is we coordinate the movement of those patients to other facilities that may have that capability within the state as well. So, again, there's a lot of different things that we can do to ensure that key essential services continue to be provided. And that's more of the urgent and ensuring that the chronic needs of the community are being met. But typically, like the going in to have a mole removed or something small like that obviously would be put on hold during any type of a significant event like this when those winds and rain are approaching.
And Chris, one of the outpatient services that we hear a lot about in Hawaii as there being a shortage of is dialysis. And how will that service be affected during an event like this?
That's a great question because I've been on the phone talking with them and we've been doing a lot of planning and we have them extremely well integrated. We have there's several things that they've been doing. They've been reaching out to their dialysis patients, communicating with them, letting them know. Some of them are shutting down when the storm is going over top. And what they're doing when that's being shut down is they're pre-dialyzing patients, meaning bringing them in early. A lot of the facilities are doing, I think most of them are going to temporarily shut down when the storm's over top, obviously, for safety reasons. But they pre-dialyze them. Again, bring them in early, give them dialysis, and give them a menu to take home that's a diet plan that helps to extend their time to the next dialysis treatment in the event that things are disrupted. And there are several things that they're doing as well is following the storm after they do the assessment on their facility and ensure that it's still functional and stuff like that, they're going to open them back up. They're going to augment their staff, meaning increase their staff significantly to catch up those folks that were unable to get in early.
And so, Chris, what should members of the general public know as the storm begins to as we begin to feel the effects of the storm across the state? If you find yourself in need of medical treatment of any kind, what should you do? Where should you go? And what should your expectations be realistically?
Sure. Unless it's an acute, like in an emergency, emergencies should go to the ER. But for the chronically ill, generally part of the preparation is ensuring you have medication on hand that'll last you a week, bringing that to a shelter, or if you're sheltering in place at home, to make sure that you have it in a place that you can access quickly. That's one big point. And they should feel a level of comfort in the fact that here in Hawaii, which is unique because the healthcare, we're so integrated emergency management-wise, is that if they're in a shelter and they start to become ill or it's a couple days and they do generally get dialysis and they're concerned about it, is they just speak with the Red Cross, and the Red Cross will go through the county, and then they will connect with us. And I have of what dialysis centers are open, and we work the moving if we have to move the patients to a different dialysis center. A lot of the dialysis centers have provided prescriptions to their dialysis patients, and what that does is that allows those patients to go to other dialysis centers that may not be that particular one or may be with a different company, and allows them to get the dialysis that they need. Prescriptions and stuff like that is the same thing in the sense of The best part and recommendation that I have for everybody is that they need to ensure individual and family preparedness and to have things on hand. And if you're on medications, make sure you have enough of that. And if you're on insulin, to understand that having a generator is extremely important because some of that has to be refrigerated. And over time, if it's not, it can degrade and they can't use it, and then they're going to be short that. But they can reach out. There is a process for reaching out, and there is a process through our partnership with Department of Health as well, is to get them what they need. But they need to also prepare and to have that on hand as responsible residents, of which, you know, we have strong communities, and a lot of them, as you've seen from the stores and such like that, are really taking this storm seriously and preparing the best way they can.
That was Chris Crabtree, director of the Hawaii Healthcare Emergency Management Agency. The organization is responsible for ensuring Hawaii's healthcare system remains effective during an emergency. He urged residents to stock up on critical medications, prepare a basic medical kit, and only seek professional medical aid for emergencies and acute conditions. Prepare, prepare, prepare. You can't stress that enough, according to Lily Bowie. She works with the Disaster Emergency Management Response Center and is studying the resiliency of island communities like Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands as a PhD candidate at MIT.
I think the most important thing is to take the warnings seriously. I think one of the bigger mistakes that people can make is to look at the warnings that have come to us from NOAA and from the weather services and to think, oh, it's not going to happen, just because it hasn't in the past. You know, in 2015 in Hawaii, we saw a lot of hurricanes pass by and dissipate as they approached the islands and also turn and, you know, go in a completely different direction. And that complacency can be really damaging to us in terms of how prepared we can be. And so, you know, Hurricane Hector passed not too long ago, without much ceremony, and then now Hurricane Lane is coming, and it looks like it's going to be the closest hurricane to come towards the island since Iniki in 1992. And we have to remember that the scale for hurricanes, the category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, each step up is a logarithmic step, meaning like 2 is much more dramatic than 1, and 3 is much more dramatic than 2. So a lot of people will say, like, okay, well, it's a Cat 4 now off the shore, and as it comes, it's supposed to dissipate into a Cat 2. 2 is less than 4, so maybe it's not going to be so bad. But no, it's still a hurricane, and a Category 2 still can bring winds as strong as 100 miles per hour, and, you know, people could still incur a lot of damage to their property.
Right. So if you live in a old wooden house built, you know, like 1950, 1930 some,
yep,
you could be in for some trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. And I see that you have the homeowner's handbook in front of you, which I think is a really great document to teach you, especially if you live in an older home that's not necessarily up to code. There are lots of homes on the island, like in Kailua, built in the 1960s, single wall with, you know, wooden frames, wooden roof. That's really vulnerable when it comes to even a Cat 2. And so, like, learning how to, you know, shutter your windows and to put hurricane clips on your roof are really worthwhile things to learn for protecting your home.
And the book you made reference to is called The Homeowner's Handbook to Prepare for Natural Hazards, put out by the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program, put together by Dennis Wong and Darren Okimoto. Lots of really good tips about how to prepare. And even though this hurricane is basically on us, we have people's attention. And if we can survive or dodge this bullet, that people really need to get serious about what to do to prepare.
Right, absolutely. So I think that's my word to the wise, is just take this seriously. You know, go get food, go get water, go get batteries and flashlights. Make sure you have your medications that you would need. Make sure your pets have food. Make sure your cars have gas, and that you have what you would need to survive in case the power grid goes out. And I think that's the biggest thing. So in Puerto Rico, we saw Hurricane Maria directly hit the island and cross over. And it was a Cat 4 when it made landfall, Cat 2 by the time it left the west side of the island. And the entire grid went out for not just days, not just weeks, but months. And the cascading effects are that, you know, you don't have ATMs that work. You can't draw out cash. You don't have water filtration. And so you have to get your potable water from bottled water or other sources that can be filtered in some other way. Businesses are going to close, and just the normal everyday things that require power will not be available to you in the same way. So I think just thinking along those lines is really important in this case.
Right. No power means no way to charge your cell phone.
Exactly.
And lots of folks are very dependent on that for means of communication.
Absolutely. That's the other biggest thing. So, like, power going out and then telecom, you know, like, even if you wanted to, you might not be able to reach someone that you know on the other side of the island or the neighbor islands to say, I'm okay, or are you okay? And in some cases, you know, you might not be able to reach family on the continental mainland to tell them that you're okay, or they may not hear from you. And that kind of generates this other sense of isolation that is really unique to islands as well, because we're so far.
Right. And the whole thing, too, about cell phone communication is some folks may have given up their landline.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that the telephone poles and the telephone lines will be standing if
right.
some serious winds come through the neighborhood.
Right. Absolutely. So, I mean, just from an individual preparedness, like, at least know where you could get to a landline, even if you don't have a landline. Maybe it's an office nearby. Maybe it's like a, I don't know if the payphones around Hawaii are still working, but, like, maybe it's that, or maybe, you know, your aunt or your uncle has a landline that you could use just in case. Because if power goes out and if communication goes out, those are really the places that people will flock to, plus ham radios. Those really worked better than satellite phones in Puerto Rico, because with satellite phones, if it's cloudy, then you won't get a good signal. With ham radios, you can communicate over shorter distances, but long enough that, you know, you might be able to broadcast and make sure that multiple people get the same message.
Is there anything else, based on what Puerto Rico went through, that you think we ought to be looking at?
I think there's a lot there. I think I'm most familiar with the power situation. But something that I see in Puerto Rico in parallel to something that's very relevant on Oahu in particular is that there are communities on island that are themselves isolated. So a lot of the cities are on the coast on islands because of port infrastructure. That's where trade happens. That's where people come and go. It's where people fly in. That's where the cruise ships dock. And so much activity and development is on the coastline. And so as a result, a lot more isolated communities are on the interior of the islands or in the mountains or places generally that aren't as touristy, basically. And I think one challenge is that there are places that FEMA will not reach or emergency management will not reach as quickly as Waikiki, for example. You know that Waikiki is going to be restored much more quickly because of the economic dependence on it, because we need tourists to come back and start spending money and feel like everything's okay. But then places like Haula, you know, will need to fend for themselves until the roads are cleared, until that road is opened up and emergency management can actually get there.
And we have been hearing from emergency management officials. The warning has been you've got to take care of your family because we may not be able to get to you for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And the whole thing is increase your food supply, that kind of thing, and just be ready.
So this was actually something that I started to think about recently. And while I completely support and advocate for that preparedness culture, be ready for 14 days or a month if you can, are we really thinking about social equity when we make those claims? You know, in a sense that if you live in a 500 square foot home and you make minimum wage, can you buy 14 days worth of food, water, flashlights, and all those extra things and get gas for your car and, you know, make sure that your extended family is okay? And then let's say that you can. If you live in a 500 square foot apartment, where are you going to put it? That's the other question. And so I think that preparedness message is so important and so critical, but it also needs to be a little bit more sensitive to what is actually possible for different people of different income levels. I think that's somewhere that the field is going next. And so we know how these hazards work. Like, we know how hurricanes form, what conditions are needed for them to actually be very impactful. We can predict their trajectories. We got the hazards part down, but the social vulnerability part, I think, is what could be a little bit stronger and sharpened when it comes to research, when it comes to practice. Just, you know, like being more sensitive to the different specific situations of people who are experiencing the same disaster in very different ways.
Right. What's realistic?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's possible?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you think would be important to stress?
I think I'm just going to go back to my first message, which is take this seriously. Even if it doesn't happen, you'll know what it takes to be prepared. And you'll be better for it, basically, for knowing that even if this doesn't happen this time, there could be another hurricane or another storm even that's strong enough to take out the power, and I'll have my flashlights or I'll have enough food for the house. So it is worthwhile. So go do it and go get ready right now.
That was Lily Bouey, who is currently working with the National Disaster Preparedness Training Center. I misspoke and gave you the wrong name earlier. Bouey is also a doctoral student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Earlier in the show, we told you about one of the most devastating hurricanes to hit Hawaii since statehood. Now, most of the damage was on Kauai, but parts of Oahu's windward side and the Waianae coast experienced quite a bit of damage. Power outages that dragged on for weeks afterwards. And maybe you still remember the long, drawn-out nights without electricity following Hurricane Eva's appearance on November 23, 1982. Over 2,300 buildings were destroyed, with damage estimated at over $300 million, which would be more than $700 million today. We also asked you if you knew what Iba means. Well, it's the Hawaiian name for the frigate bird. The word also is used to describe a thief because Iba has been known to get its food by stealing from other birds. And congratulations to Kakaako resident Carolyn Carley. You got it right. And that's today's quiz. If you have an idea for one, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. HPR's Wayne Yoshioka is joining us live this morning. He is out and about in Waikiki and gives us a sense of what's happening out there. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Catherine. Yes, I've spent the morning out here in Waikiki. I visited, talked to tourists up and down the beach. Also talked to Jerry Dolak, who's the Outrigger Resort's Director of Security and Safety, as far as what they're doing to prepare for the hurricane. They have 10 properties in Waikiki, from the big hotels to the little boutique hotels. And they have an emergency management team that they stand up and then they, you know, do various scenarios. What they're doing now is they're preparing for a hurricane, a full-blown hurricane. So that would be the worst-case scenario. And they have all of their employees housed at the hotel, so when the buses stop, there won't be any interruption in service. They have all of the guests ready to marshal into big rooms where they would be entertained, have the food that they would like, and all those little things that make a visit to Hawaii kind of special. The beach here is relatively crowded. It was there's a little drizzle right now and gray skies, but other than that, it looks like a normal day. In Waikiki, it's not overly crowded, but it's not all sparse either. So that's how it is in Waikiki.
Well, Wayne, I know there's some concern because I think the bus service stops at like 6 o'clock today, and a lot of the hotel workers actually take the bus into work.
Correct. But the Outrigger, they're housing their employees at the hotel. So there won't be any issues as far as employees going home and trying to fight their way back to work. So they're going to feed them, they're going to house them, and they're going to, you know, that's what they do. They're a hotel. So it's really a great plan that they have going.
And I know the airport officials were saying, you know, if you have flights out scheduled over the next couple of days, to call the airlines first before you actually go to the airport. I think that's really good advice because you don't know what's happening out there.
Correct. And there are a lot of visitors that I talk to that are trying to get out. But, you know, some are just saying, well, I guess we'll have 3 days of rain and indoor activities, and doesn't look like they can fly out early.
Okay. And I don't know if you've gotten the update, but we just got word that there's going to be a 2 p.m. news conference with Governor David Ige, Mayor Caldwell, as well as William Roche. He's a deputy administrator for Region 9 for FEMA, as well as Adjutant General Logan from the State Department of Defense. So I don't know if you're planning to go there, but it sounds like we'll get the latest then.
Yeah, that'll be an update, but, you know, it's just a report in progress. I don't know how that will change over time when the as the hurricane nears to Oahu and Maui and Kauai.
Right, but folks just need to stay tuned and just watch this as the storm comes. Thanks a lot, Wayne.
Okay, thanks, Catherine.
Well, that's it for today. Up tomorrow, we invite you to call in and join the conversation as we talk disaster preparedness for residents and visitors. Is your condo shutting down its elevator service because it doesn't have backup generators? Call in, share your experience. Are you hunkering down in a hotel? Are you a guest or a hotel worker? Do you live in an old single-wall constructed wooden home? Worried if it will survive high winds? Tell us on your what's on your mind. Call our talkback line. That number, 972-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.